I'm David Love Jones, and welcome to a special, special edition of African Rhythms. We're going to present my interview last week at Rossini's with Mr. Bobby Taylor. Originally Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers around Motown back in the 60s. We're going to talk about that as well as Bobby's been arranging and helping these three ladies get together, and they're a group named Vivid. I'm David Love Jones, and welcome to a special, special edition of African Rhythms. We're going to present my interview last week at Rossini's with Mr. Bobby Taylor. Originally Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers around Motown back in the 60s. We're going to talk about that as well as Bobby's been arranging and helping these three ladies get together, and they're a group named Vivid. I'm David Love Jones, and this is on location at Rossini's Restaurants. And we have three young ladies. They've just performed their first gig together live under the great Bobby Taylor.
We are all about known as we're babies.
Babies.
Little babies.
Oh, neat. Yeah. Okay. So tell me, what's the name of your group?
Vivid.
Okay.
V-I-V-I-D.
And what's your name?
Linnea.
And your name?
Malia May.
Yep. And?
Carson Gray.
So how did you guys get together? Tell me about your interrelationship with Bobby Taylor.
It was mostly our dads that kind of put together.
Yeah, they all realized we had voices, and then they're all great friends with Bobby, so we just kind of told Bobby about it and wanted to work with us right away. And my connection with Bobby is he's known my parents for years and years, and then he's known me since I was just a little baby, newborn.
That's really neat. So what are some of your inspirations and influences?
Oh, Michael Jackson, number one, for sure. Mm-hmm. And my father, he's a singer, musician too, so he's always been my inspiration, my idol.
And so you guys are hoping to record some tracks?
Yeah.
Oh,
definitely.
That's the plan, at least.
So have you got any original material?
Getting some ready.
We all write, so yeah.
Yeah. So is Bobby going to be helping you with some of the arranging and
that
kind of thing?
Definitely. Bobby's going to be there all down the road.
So any interest from record labels so far?
We hear things. We hear lots from Bobby, but he doesn't like to tell us that much yet.
Yeah.
We are all taking it very slowly.
Yeah. We don't want to get our hopes up too much.
But. Yeah. Let's take it slowly.
That's cool.
It's not
so
just excited yet. We'll freak out.
Yeah. So some studio time. Are you going to be getting in the studio?
Oh yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
Your guys' singing is definitely, there's some real improvised soul style in there, I think. And, you know, you're singing some really great songs. Mm-hmm. So I think you guys could go a long way. But with somebody like Bobby, who has so much experience with arranging and writing and production, I think is pretty essential. So you must be pretty happy to have him.
Oh yeah, we're so happy. You're so blessed.
Yeah.
He's a legend.
Yeah, definitely. He's a total legend. And I mean, being from Vancouver, it's quite incredible to have somebody of his kind of talents, you know, on the local scene.
Without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
He's a straight up guy.
Yeah.
You know, and him and I have talked about it for a while for him to work with Malia. And I'm just happy he brought these two to the fold.
Yeah.
It's a great team of kids that have been working together for only less than two weeks.
That's what Bobby said. Yeah. It shows the potential.
The potential's great. They're all three
all
very unique voices.
Together. Very
clean.
In the first week we had all the songs down, and then the last week. But I'm telling you, it was hard work. It wasn't easy.
No, it's not easy. But in some ways, though, the more you do it, the easier it gets.
Yeah.
And it's the same with live. I mean, I remember when I was first on the radio 12 years ago, and it's hard at first, but the more you perform in front of an audience or in front of people, it becomes more natural.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's always been our dream to do this kind of stuff, so we're just so pumped for it. You know,
we've been so excited to have this opportunity. It just...
Yeah.
It's all coming
amazing.
Ever since I remember, this is what I've been wanting to do. So,
what are some of your inspirations for vocal? What about Aretha Franklin?
Oh yeah,
Any other inspirations you can think of?
Mine forever was Alicia Keys.
Mm. Yeah,
forever. Just because she's got so much soul in her music.
Yeah, definitely.
I love Diana Ross too.
Yeah. For her class. And,
she's just, I love her.
Well, it's important to have inspirations.
And Billie Holiday and Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston. Yeah. Especially Whitney Houston. She's been through a lot, and like they're all incredible singers, and I hope to reach their heights.
Well, Billie Holiday, you can't beat that kind of vocal class. You can hear sort of the echoes of Billie Holiday in a lot of vocalists.
Mm-hmm.
And Dinah Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like you guys have had a good upbringing of musical tastes.
And Aaliyah, even though she's not with us anymore, Aaliyah's always been one that I've been listening to.
I like all of those people for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. Well, I wish you guys all the best. And you're going to go out and do another set?
Yes, we are.
Okay, I'll try to record you guys a little bit so I can play something on the radio.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
This is a big miss for these young ladies to come back. And you're gonna really be shocked on the second one. I'm gonna tell you that. There's some things that you won't believe will come out of these young ladies. And I want everybody to understand and know this. They did all of this in less than 2 weeks. So they need to be commended. We'll be back.
Bobby Taylor, welcome. It's great to have you on African Rhythms Radio.
Thank you, David.
We're down here at Rossini's, and I mean, I know this is a very, shall we say, a comfortable place for you to play, and you're around friends down here. You know, it's a wonderful venue.
Well, yeah, it's a place where I can keep my my chops up, be around my friends. I love working the two guys I'm working with. I taught them both when they were kids. And it's special to work with somebody that you taught and they're playing so well now. They were kids that used to hang around my original group and listen to us, and they wanted to learn. And I was just always, I came from such a large family that I was just one guy that would always help a kid out. Mm-hmm. Most of the guys in the business won't help a kid out, or nobody, you know. They don't really give a kid in. But me, I'll help a kid in a minute. If I can keep one kid off the streets,
yeah,
I've done a good thing in life.
It's
Fascinating for me that here you are, Bobby Taylor, and you know, you've been in Vancouver all this time, and you know, the history books say, or the, you know, the way it's out to say your international fans, Bobby, is that here you were in Vancouver, a member of the a couple of members of the Supremes. I guess they came and saw you here playing.
Yeah, it happened like this. The Supremes were appearing at the Cave, and the Cave was the Mecca in those days, back in the 60s, early 60s. And Tommy Chong and I, everybody knows who that is, from Cheech and Chong, Tommy and Tommy was in the band.
He was in the Vancouver's.
He was in the Vancouver's, and so was Jimi Hendrix at that time.
Yeah.
So when they first, you know, I brought the girls over, and when they first heard us, they sent the road manager to a telephone. Now, I didn't find this out until later, but the very next night, Berry Gordy Jr. was in our club down on Davy and Burrard. It was called the Elegant Parlor.
So he flew in?
He flew in, yes. Yeah. But the only two people that came to see us was Florence Ballard and Mary Wilson. Diana Ross was too, she was too good.
Yeah.
You know. So anyhow, that second night, like I said, Berry Gordy came in, and the third day, we were signed with Motown.
That's, I mean, that's incredible that, that Barry would sign you so quickly. I mean, it's not like he was doing that all the time, you know, and especially the fact that you were here, out here in Vancouver. Yeah.
You know who he did it with the other time? Michael Jackson, after I took Michael to him. It was, I brought Michael to him, right?
He was on Steeltown back then, their first singles.
Yeah, he was on Steeltown, but that, you know, that was
small town.
That was real. No, that was garbage too. Yeah. Michael was screaming, trying to sound like James Brown, so forth and so on. We didn't know what he was doing.
But well, I mean, like, he was only 5 years old.
No, well, yeah, and then when he turned 8 is when I found him.
And you knew right away?
Oh, I knew right away.
You knew he was had star.
Oh yeah, I knew it right away because
he could sing. And
he would not go away from me. He would not leave me. He. He watched me on every show, and at those times, we were doing shows from 9 a.m. in the morning until 12 midnight. This was in Chicago at the Regal Theater, and my co-star, believe it or not, was Jerry Butler.
Wow.
The Jerry
Butler.
The Iceman. The Iceman, that's right. And we had a hell of a show, and those kids were opening.
So then you started touring.
So I started touring. We went into Chicago and you hear these little guys open up the show. And the promoter told me, say, hey man, you better look at these little kids. This little boy needs to be, somebody needs to do something. And
you took him under your wing.
I took him under my wing. And the rest is history.
Okay, the first album. Tell me about the first album, because I mean, it's the Mizell brothers were on it. I Want You Back, and those first tracks.
They weren't on. They were on it.
Yeah.
But that was because Barry put them on.
Yeah.
Me and Barry had a falling out. So Barry wanted to punish me, and I'd done all of those songs already. And then he put these guys on and to mix and to do this and change a few things here and change a few things there. It didn't change what I'd already done. And it was I Want You Back. I'll be there.
That's a huge
maybe one. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Then
so solo Michael as well.
Huh?
So that was a solo Michael track.
Yeah, but yeah. That was when Barry was trying to get the kids to go. See, Ben had a lot of background on it. Barry just wiped it off. Oh yeah, right. He was the owner.
Yeah, so he played God over your arrangements.
Over everybody's. Over yeah. Everybody's.
So you weren't digging that too much?
No.
Yeah.
And I offered him a fight, and he accepted it, and we fought at Bob Hoot's ranch for, I'm telling you,
like
serious,
a fight.
A fight. See,
like,
I was
like
a boxer.
Boxing.
I was a boxer, and he was too.
Yeah.
I was on the 60 Olympic team, but he was a professional.
Yeah.
Mattered to me, because I knocked him out in two rounds. And we fought in front of nothing but very rich people. It was a thing that we were doing for Sugar Ray Robinson's youth camp.
Yeah.
And when we did that, Barry promised that if I beat him, right, that he would give the youth camp $1 million.
Did he?
He gave him $1 million.
Nice.
Some girls, they get weary wearing that same old shaggy dress. But although she's weary, try a little tenderness. That's all you got to do now. I know she's waiting, just anticipating for the things she'll never, never possess. But while she's there waiting, go on and try a little tenderness. That's all you got to do now. It's not just sentimental, no, 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 no. She has her grief and care, but the soft words are spoken so gentle, gentle, gentle. It makes it easier.
Do you have some admiration for Barry?
I love him.
I mean, what he did for
he was business.
For black music.
He was just huge. He was.
But I mean, he was business. But the developments of soul music, of black music, was large, really, with what he brought to.
He was actually the creator.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he did it by bringing in people who could do things. He brought Charlie Atkins in.
Yeah.
Charlie Atkins was the one that did all of the choreography for the Temptations, the Four Tops, Gladys Knight, the Pips, the Contours. He gave it class. And then there was a lady named Mrs. Powell. who taught all of the guys and the women in the company and that were artists how to walk, how to talk to people, how to do this, how to do that. So he did all of this.
Yeah.
And then he had arrangers.
Mm-hmm.
He had arrangers for records, and then he had arrangers for your show.
CITR 101.9 FM.
Then he had the greatest band that ever congregated the Four Points. Nobody could beat those guys, I don't care. You know, MFSB, they couldn't come close to the Funk Brothers at that time.
So why at that time did none of the musicians get any credit? Was that just the way things went back then?
No, that was the way that this senior vice president of the company did everything.
Yeah.
And Barry was only the owner.
Yeah.
He left everything in everyone else's hands, which he was supposed to.
Yeah.
As long as the money was coming in, he could have cared less. And
yeah,
that's the way it goes.
It just seems to me, you know, I've studied and followed the whole history of this music for a long time. I mean, that's why I call my show African Rhythms, because, you know, I see the African roots in all of this music.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, like, part of what I'm fighting for is the injustice. And there is so much injustice, you know. I mean, even within Motown, that, yes, I credit Barry Gordy for a lot of the things he did, but I don't like the fact that you and a lot of people never got paid, that a lot of the musicians, the Funk Brothers, never got credited. Like, there definitely, I do have some issues.
They didn't get paid either.
Yeah.
They were paid a weekly salary.
Yeah.
Whereas
not very much.
Yeah. Whereas the guys in Los Angeles and Chicago and Philadelphia were getting paid by the session. And these guys were back there, the best in the world. James Jameson, Robert White. And Robert White was the guitar player that played the famous lick. Down, 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 down.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what that is.
Yeah.
Earl Van Dyke on piano.
Yeah. These were the best.
The greatest. Earl Jones on drums.
Yeah.
These were the Funk Brothers.
Yeah.
Right. Eddie Bongo on congos and percussions.
Yeah.
And everybody thought Motown was Lily Black. It wasn't.
Yeah.
We had great white guys playing, you know, Jack Brokenshaw. And I never heard a black man named
Brokenshaw. Let's face it, music has no color. I think, you know, as long as you properly credit where the roots of the music are, you know, I mean, I think this is one of the most important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean, interestingly enough, though, your first Motown record, people don't consider it to be particularly Motown sound.
Yeah, you know? Because we were completely different.
Yeah.
First, we were the very first mixed band in the whole world.
Racially mixed band
in the whole world.
Yeah.
Second, when we came up with Does Your Mama Know About Me, first everybody thought it was about a black man and a white woman, automatically.
Yeah. Automatically. Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was about Tommy Chong. There's Tommy Chong right there as we're looking.
Yeah.
It was Tommy Chong.
Yeah.
See, there's Tommy and I right there, see?
Oh, nice.
Tommy Chong and Tommy Chong's wife. That's what it was about. Tommy Chong's wife is black. Tommy Chong, everybody knows, is Chinese.
Yeah.
There we are, back in sleep.
Well, we're blessed with a lot of Chinese culture in Vancouver. What can we say?
You know,
don't surely come your way. Maybe I shouldn't worry, but I've been through this before, and I'd like to get things straight before I'm knocking on your door. Does your mama know about me? Does she know just what I am?
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio, right up here in Vancouver, CITR.ca.
This young man, I taught him when he was 16 years old.
Yeah.
And listen to him now.
It's fantastic.
I just have to sit back and just applaud.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sometimes I pat myself on the back because I was able to pick these good kids.
Yeah.
And these good people who love, I call it my music.
Yeah.
Because I've been doing this since I was 3 and I'm 72 now.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it's fantastic here. I think, you had a hit, Does Your Mama Know About Me? In fact, it was number one R&B hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you had some success with that first album. In fact, Does Your Mama came out in 68.
Yeah.
They finally released the single. Mm-hmm. See, this is where historians like myself and British and Japanese people and people that really appreciate what you're all about really come into it, because your second record was a solo record. It was no longer with the Vancouvers, and that was partially to do with the fact you were producing Michael Jackson and some of the things
Really, what it was, believe it or not, was my band was fired.
Yeah.
While I was producing Jackson 5.
So they got
selfish. It was because of Tommy.
Yeah.
Tommy was carrying his now wife with him on the road.
Yeah.
So Motown was paying his now wife and his wife here.
Yeah.
And they thought that they were supposed to do that, which they really were.
Yeah.
So Tommy kind of screwed that up. So they punished all of my guys for that.
Yeah. So that was real changes for you. But the funny thing was, follow-up records are always difficult, Bobby. As you well know, follow-up records can mean that are not successful, but yet you came back with this record that, by all accounts, to historians now, is one of the greatest follow-up records ever. It has, we could talk about a couple of the tracks. Don't Be Afraid. Tell me about that track. That's a phenomenal track.
Don't Be Afraid, if people was to see the man who wrote that and produced it on it, they would go somewhere and cry.
Yeah.
He's a street person in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So sad that I saw that happen.
You say that nothing the love you had is gone, left you sad and all alone, all by yourself. And you say you'll never give your heart again and let it be torn apart by anyone else. But don't be afraid, for I won't harm you. Wells and falling stars. You've opened your eyes and finally seen all of life's hard realities and speeding cars. But don't be among the stars, and love will be wherever we are, just as long as we are there together.
72 years old.
I can't believe you're 72.
Born February 18th, 1934.
I guess that's because when you were signed to Motown, you were already 31 years old.
Absolutely.
You'd already had a little bit of a career, but it was mainly local, I would say.
No. No? My career started actually when I was three. The first song that I ever sang public was taught to me by the lady, Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
And it was Lullaby. Yeah.
And that was in Vancouver?
No, no. That was in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
See, a lot of people think I was born in Vancouver. I wasn't.
Yeah.
I was born in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Right? My next-door neighbor, who was born... I was born in a house, and he was born in a house.
Mm-hmm.
Was Marvin Gaye. Next door. Neither one of us. We were babies. We didn't know what we were going to do. Marvin was a piano player. He couldn't do the things that I did. He was a piano player in his father's church.
You knew Marvin from way back.
I knew Marvin from
day one.
From day one. Yeah.
In my life, there's no misfortune, no trouble, no disaster. You're my lucky charm, my guiding star. Just your smile can chase my blues away. I can't help it, baby. You're so wonderful. One man be all your tenderness and your sweet caress.
If Marvin had lived, he would be right now 71.
Yeah.
No, he'd be 72 now, because my birthday, when I turned 72, he was still 71. He turned 71 in, he would have turned 72 in the 2nd of April.
Yeah, so he really went a different fork in the road than you. Drugs and problems.
No, I did the same kind of drugs he did.
Yeah.
The drugs took him.
Yeah.
And took a hold of him. I did them for pleasure.
Yeah.
Because I was young and dumb and, you know, we were all stupid then. We all did some type of drugs. And we did all that same stuff.
Yeah.
But I didn't get hooked up into drugs.
Yeah, he got heavy into it.
Yeah. He got... the only drug that to me is useful that people do nowadays is marijuana.
Well, I mean, getting back to Marvin, I mean, I think that some people, you know, very emotional people, and doing something like cocaine or whatever just affected him too much, you know? He became obsessed or whatever.
No, let me tell you about Marvin. I knew him so well.
Yeah.
Here's what was wrong with Marvin. Marvin had a phobia about his parents. That's what killed Marvin.
Yeah.
Right? It was... Marvin didn't think his father liked him.
Yeah. I've got to tell the world about it. I want to stand right up and shout it. Oh, lucky me, baby.
Not yet.
Insecurity.
Insecurity wasn't even a word.
Yeah.
Then you had a mother who was domineering.
Oh, baby. And I don't mind if my friends get together and leave me out of everything they do.
Who didn't want the father anymore after 54 years of marriage? Now, what does a man or a woman do after 54 years of marriage who's thinking about getting a divorce? I don't think they can go out and party no more.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So she was the catalyst of Marvin being dead.
Because I'm no good without you. But I know as long as I've got you, oh, lucky me, baby, lucky me.
Yeah. It was her. But then you look at it like this. Marvin died. She died.
Yeah.
Marvin's brother died. Marvin's sister died.
Frankie
died from drinking. His sister died.
He was a talent himself.
Yes, he was. But Sweetsy died, right? From drugs, right?
Ugly.
And guess who died last?
Who?
The man who killed Marvin, his father.
Yeah.
And people didn't know that man had a brain tumor at the time.
Yeah.
But Marvin Gaye was beaten.
Yeah.
I know what happened.
Abusive relationship.
It was abusive because, you know, his father was... A strict, I don't know what you would call him. He didn't let him do anything. It was only church, you know.
It was a little bit warped.
He was completely warped, the old man was. But
yeah.
I always learned as a kid, honor thy father and thy mother.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say I don't care what they do.
Honor them.
The Bible says that. It doesn't say only if they or only if she. It doesn't say that. It says honor thy father and thy mother. So I don't care what they do. You won't have to pay for it. If you do what that Bible tells you to. Those people who don't do it, they got to pay for it.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. I mean, speaking about Marvin, how religious he was and how spiritual he was, yet how messed up his life was.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. He brought a lot of that on himself.
But, I mean, what an incredible talent. I mean, the world may never see another talent.
Well, I'll say this about him. There was never another person that was as good as he was in a studio. But Marvin wasn't nothing on stage. Marvin Gaye was the worst on stage. He was worst, and then next to him, this will blow you away, was Stevie Wonder was the one that was the worst one on stage, and then Marvin next.
I didn't mind Marvin on stage sometimes, like for instance, Distant Lover or something like that. He did really well.
Yeah, but I'm talking about his complete show.
What about the fact that he wouldn't show up a lot?
Oh, yeah. That's because of the drugs.
Yeah.
And he would
He's
be
notorious
there.
For that.
He would be there.
Yeah.
I did the tour, the 77, 78 tour with him.
Yeah.
And Marvin would not come on stage.
Yeah.
I took his backup group.
Yeah.
And I had to sing most of the songs.
Yeah.
Right, Marvin would sit up there and hold the microphone and act like he was singing, and it was all me.
Bobby, I mean, after that second album, and, you know, we were talking to you, you know, the incredible tracks. I've Been Blessed was a Northern Soul, big track. I mean, to this day, people love that track.
They love, I've Been Blessed. I'm going to tell you something else they love down there. Out in the country.
Yeah.
And people wouldn't. None of them. And the kid came to me one day. He said, "Man, I need a break."
Yeah.
I said, "Okay, what you got?" He said, "I got this one song, man. Will you try it for me?" And the kid came to me one day. He said, "Man, I need a break."
So what happened, Bobby? I mean, after that second album, and, you know, we were talking.
And the kid came to me one day. He said, "Man, I need a break."
Yeah.
I said, "Okay, what you got?" He said, "I got this one song, man." produced and
so
wrote that
song. What happened, Bobby?
Yeah.
I mean, after that second
Rick
album,
James.
And, you know,
but his real name was,
you know,
Rick Matthews.
Yeah. So that was early on for him.
That was his first.
Yeah.
I was his first anything. That
so
he
you
did
recognized his talent?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And the kid came to me one day, he said, "Man, I need a break."
Yeah.
I said, "Okay, what you got?"
Yeah.
He said, "I got this one song, man. Will you try it for me?" I said, "Cool."
Yeah.
And the rest is history after I did that for him.
Yeah, yeah.
As I watched the golden sun creep down the mountainside, I turned my face to the wind to blow away these tears I cried. Walking down the path, I kicked a stone to release some pain. Thinking back to days when love was just like sunshine instead of rain. But I can't help but wonder just how you feel since you've been gone. Is that a happy smile you're wearing? Or pretense cost you?
I mean, the reason probably that record is so diverse and so great is you had complete quality control over who was producing, what songs you did, whatever.
Well, I did it because Berry Gordy told me in the beginning.
Yeah.
Don't let all of these guys come up and bring you songs and produce you. Say, because you're going to be spending your money.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't know what he meant until they started coming up to me. I had 10 guys every day. 10 guys coming up to me.
Yeah.
Trying to get me to, you know.
But you made the right choices. You know, I mean,
yes.
These tracks have lasted the test of time. I mean,
right.
You know, it's no longer any debate. You know.
But your favorite was after I left Motown.
Yeah, Roses.
There are roses somewhere in this world, and most people don't know who did that with me.
Yeah. Yeah, tell me about that song.
Do you know who Burt Bacharach is?
Absolutely.
Okay, do you know what his writing partner was named?
Hal David.
Thank you. His brother was the guy that wrote their Roses along with Hal David.
So that they signed you for a 45?
No. What happened was this. Mac David and I met at A&M.
Yeah.
I was doing another group of kids called the Jacksons. I think all girls.
Oh, the Jackson Sisters.
Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mamas and the Papas.
Because they did remember a Bobby song Roberts? That was off your album.
Remember Bobby Roberts them had Mamas and the Papas. And they had a partner who was the head of Old Records.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So I was doing his kids for him,
yeah.
Right? And Mac David came in with one of the songs for these kids.
Yeah.
He and I met. He said, you know, I got a song over there, man. I sure would love it if you'd come over and just see what you think of it.
Yeah.
I went over. He says, would you do this for me? I said, sure. The heck? I said, you're David? I said, long as your brother is in on it. He said, well, my brother wrote it with me. And they don't even have his brother on there, and I know why. Because his brother was still under contract
right.
to somebody else.
A lot of that happened.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
See the lamppost in our ghetto, that's a moon. And our starlight, a flashing neon sign. And on a rooftop, there's a
CITR 101.9 FM, so UBC Radio.
Where was I? Where were we?
We're talking about the Jackson.
No.
Was that what they were called?
No, no.
No, the Jackson Sisters.
The Jackson Sisters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Jackson
called.
Sisters.
But they, you know, after I did that, then, yeah. You know, I told you that Mac David asked me to do that.
Yeah.
For Curve. His name was Mike Curve. I knew I was going to remember it.
Yeah.
Mike Curve, who became the Lieutenant Governor of California.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But he was the one that was the catalyst for the Osmond Brothers.
Yeah.
When they did One Bad Apple, which was a piece of a doo-doo of a song.
Well, isn't it kind of a rip-off of the Jacksons?
It was a rip-off of the Jacksons, yeah. And that's what Mike did. Mike was known for that.
Yeah.
So when I came over and did this one song,
yeah.
Right, they were so thankful that I did it, you know, because it helped Mac get out of something.
There. Yeah.
And I helped Mac get out of... Mac and I, we stayed friends up until the day he passed.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the Jackson Sisters, actually, they have legendary cult status these days.
Yeah.
That record they did back then, I Believe in Miracles.
You know whose song that was?
Whose song was that?
That was my song.
That's a great
I'm still
track.
Getting paid to this day for that.
Well, it's a big track. I mean, in Japan, they love that, you know.
Same song.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible.
You know,
I never knew that. I never made the connect. But
yeah
that one, when I went back to England, because I'm from there originally in the late 80s, I Believe in Miracles, Jackson's had been licensed, PolyGram licensed it to their Urban affiliate in the UK, and it was out again. And, you know, Rare Groove Funk, that's when it started getting big in the late 80s. That's when the hip-hop guys started sampling it. I know you're not that partial to sampling or whatever. But the one good thing about it is, though, Bobby, is it is bringing back some of these artists. You know, Roy Ayers and Bob James, a lot of these guys have got majorly paid.
Well, now they are. But see, the whole shot was when the big money was going around.
Yeah.
Right? None of us got it.
Crisscross, I don't know about that one.
Well, I do. Yeah. Get the record that Crisscross did, the very first one.
I heard
and you'll hear it behind. Yeah.
No, I just don't know. I just mean, I don't know if people got paid for that.
Nobody got paid, I'm telling you. I'm gonna teach you how to sing it out. Come on, come on, come on, let me show you what it's all about. Nobody got paid
for it. In the 90s, the lawyers were on it.
Well, that's why. It took that long.
Well, I mean, I had no idea how many of tracks that you wrote and arranged, you know, had been sampled. Because, you know, I mean, I've talked to other artists like Otis Clay in Chicago. Not really any of his particular ones got sampled. But the thing is the depth and breadth of the material that you have had a hand in is quite incredible, really. You know, if you take into account Want You Back and ABC and I Believe in Miracles, you know, I mean, these are big tracks.
Right.
You know, so.
But I'll tell you what, when you get to meet and talk to Bunny Siegman, he's going to tell you how many they sampled of his.
Yeah.
It's going to blow you away. Yeah. You know?
Well, let's talk about your modern stuff now. I mean, you've hooked up now with this new project, this CD that's going to be coming out. Tell us about that.
Well, let me tell you. It's the guys that got screwed in Philly International Records by Gamble and Huff.
Yeah.
And the guys who got screwed at Motown Records, right? All got together. Now we all did an album called A Soulful Tale of Two Cities.
That's great.
And people, the ones from Philly are doing the Motown stuff. The Motown stuff is doing all Philly songs.
Yeah, you gave me a CD today of you doing Love Train.
Love Train, that's the single. That is the single, buddy, and let me tell you, I didn't think I had it in me. I mean to record.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm doing...
You recorded that in Philly?
I did it in Detroit.
In Detroit.
With the Funk Brothers.
Yeah.
Funk Brothers band is behind us.
It's hot.
Right? Yeah. And believe it or not, that's Bunny Siegler and Phil Hurt, right? That's doing the backup. And the three of us are doing the backup.
That's fantastic.
And we did this at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
In Detroit, I'm leaving the next morning, coming back home to Vancouver.
Yeah.
And it was done that fast. Hi there, it's Bobby Taylor. You guys really need to listen to African Rhythm Radio at CITR. 101.9 FM, but the great David Love Jones.
We make
2006, Bobby, it's a good year for you because I mean, also we've, you know, I've been blessed to get this a recent CD from England of your unissued Motown stuff.
Yes, and guess what? I just heard last week that they're getting ready to drop it in the States.
That's
it's done that good. It sold over 60,000 units in the UK.
Yeah, well, it's not surprising. I mean, the UK, I mean, they love you. And, I mean, look, I mean, this has got Grandma's Hands.
It does. All of those old things that I did.
Soulman.
Grandma's Hands, clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma's Hands, used to ache sometime and swell. Grandma's Hands, used to issue out a warning. She said, Hattie, don't you hit that boy. What you wanna smack him for? You know, I mean, just...
Bill Withers.
Bill Withers was...
Fantastic.
And here's the kick. Yeah. Bill Withers used to be... When I was in college at San Jose State, he was my mailman.
Yeah.
He carried the mail. It was incredible, and he always carried it with that guitar of his.
Well, when he came out with his stuff, it was so innocent, you know, the material. It was just so beautiful. Almost... It didn't almost need to be really that produced, you know? The guy was just so good, you know?
Oh, yeah, phenomenal. He was...
Sunday morning, Grandma's Hands played the tambourine so well. Grandma's Hands used to issue out a warning. She said, Bobby, don't you run so fast. Might fall on a piece of glass. Might be snakes there in that grass. Grandma's Hands. Grandma's Hands used to ache sometimes and swell. Grandma's Hands used to lift her face and tell us, she'd say, Sister Grandma, understand that you really love that man. Put yourself in Jesus' hands, Grandma's Hands. But I don't have grandma anymore. When I get to heaven, I'll look for
grandma's hands.
I'll look for
grandma's hands.
I'll search for
grandma's hands.
I'm looking for
grandma's hands.
Harlem, too, that you do on that.
Yeah,
that's
a good one.
That's one of my favorites.
Oh, that, I love that song, man. Yeah. You know, and I'd forgotten that I did that song.
Yeah.
Most
how
of
did
the songs.
How did that come about? Any idea?
I don't know. Yeah. I cannot remember. So help me God. I cannot remember how half of those songs on that album is, what is it, 46 songs on it?
Yeah.
Half of the songs, I don't know how I did them or when I did them or even where.
Harlem. summer night in Harlem. Oh, man, it's really hot. Well, I'm too hot to sleep and too cold to eat. I don't care if I die now. When a night in Harlem, a radiator won't get hot. Well, the mean old landlord, he don't care if I freeze to death or not. Saturday night in Harlem, oh, everything's all right.
Everything's
you
all
can
right.
Really swing down, shake your pretty thing, cause the party's out of sight. Sunday morning here in Harlem, everybody's
orchestra.
Well, here folks getting home from the party, the good folks just got up. Now listen up, the cookie delegation wants the donation to send the preacher to the Holy Land. Wants a donation to send the preacher to the Holy Land.
Version, you were right about that.
I told you, and it was up tempo with a big band.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal version. I'm not even that big of a fan of that track, but I love your version.
And then you heard the way I did it tonight, completely different.
Yeah, you know. Well, that's the beauty now, Bobby, is that you know, you're a master of the song, you know, and timing and great songs. You know, we're blessed in Vancouver to have somebody like you, you know, that we can hear such things.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
folks, let me tell you, go down to Vinyl Record Shop on Hastings Square. This young man here, he has just, I mean, he's going into his pockets just to help and give me something that I couldn't find and see, and I think you'll wonder. I mean, the stuff that you keep our music alive by keeping those vinyls.
Yeah.
And people, go down and see this young man. What's the address?
319 West Hastings.
Hello. Go in and see it. And if he needs me to come down there and you want one of my songs, I'll come down and sign it for you.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, thanks a lot, Bobby. I have one last request from you.
Cool.
Could you sing a couple lines from Roses for me?
See the lamppost in our ghetto, that's our room. Our starlights, a flashing neon sign. Oh, I gotta go and finish it.
Man, you know, folks, he sang almost the whole track for me at my shop today. Yeah. So we'll get him to do that a cappella at CITR.
Absolutely.
Sometime.
I'll definitely do it for you, too.
Yeah. Thank you, my friend. It was
God
great
bless
to
you.
Interview.
God bless you.
Yeah.
And I'll do it again with you. How about that?
Fantastic. Okay.
That's it. That's the Bobby Taylor special. I'm David Love Jones, and of course you've been listening to African Rhythms on CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio. CITR.ca. We're up here on the University of British Columbia of UBC. And that was it. That was the Bobby Taylor interview special tonight on African Rhythms. Big up to Nardwa for calling in. Thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate your encouragement. That's my first interview that I've done on location. And, of course, we included some live, a couple of little bits of live tracks. Like earlier on, we heard People Get Ready from Rossini's. And then later on there, we heard Bobby doing What's Going On. So we're going to go out with... So we'll go out with another track we briefly discussed. He was saying it was Frank Wilson was the producer, and that was I've Been Blessed from the TaylorMade Soul, which was his second album that came out in 1970. And I just want to thank Bobby Taylor for allowing such an extensive interview with him and giving me every moment of his time in between sets down at Rossini's. So a big up to Bobby. I hope I've done your incredible career justice with this interview and the history of all of this music. Until next time, peace and love. And that's a classic episode of African Rhythms from 2006. And next up, we've got another one on this special holiday show. And next we've got the All Latin Show. I'm David Love Jones. Stick around, 604-822-CITR.